pretty much everything is AI. When you everything you do with computers is AI. What people are really talking about is machine learning, where the thing you teach the computer how to do isn't how to do something. You teach it how to learn from its mistakes. And that's really the specific branch of AI.
You teach it the patterns of doing.
Not even. You teach it its actions, the actions it could take, but you just tell it what the goal state looks like. Here's what a good decision will do. Now figure out which decision is a good decision. Learn. What you teach it to do is learn. You teach it how to learn. And so with that, it can just pick up the ball and run and solve problems that no one has any hope of even understanding. That which is insane. We've never been in a position as a society where we could solve problems that we don't even understand consistently.
What is up? Welcome back to AI Unchained. We've got Hope on the show with us today because we're going to be diving into the Building with AI series, which I don't even think you like that title because we're trying to target people who don't realize that they are developers, but that can actually kind of be developers now with AI. Basically, the people in my situation, right, is the people who are technically literate and, you know, can probably break out a terminal and do a couple of things and don't realize that in combination with AI, what you can actually achieve with a few iterations and just kind of understanding how these tools work. And Hope has been working with me on a project. You may have seen our live stream, which was a little bit disjointed, but our live stream on just kind of like tackling this for the first thing and doing a to-do app. But Hope is a developer here. And actually, if you want to give a little bit of an introduction, just kind of for yourself so that people can kind of know who you are, because we haven't done this before. So welcome to AI Unchained, dude. Thank you for all of the work that you have done with me off of this. It's kind of crazy how long we've actually been doing this now.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool to see this actually turn into some AI Unchained stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Welcome to the show, officially.
Thank you. My name's Hope. I'm a programmer. I think Bitcoin can make a lot of things better. And I think AI can make a lot of things better. And I think if you put them together, if you are aware of the resources at your disposal, I think the average person can do more than the wealthiest person 200 years ago could have done. So hopefully just spreading that message and showing people the entire process from start to finish. Where like I have a computer science degree and I've been programming for a long time, but because I also understand though that with the way I use AI tools, you don't really need to do that to be able to build a lot of things. And so hopefully with this series, if we just sit down and from idea to finished product and everything in between, hopefully we can show and give confidence to the average viewer who might only know a little bit about computers, but hopefully we could just show them they can build pretty much anything that they want.
It's crazy to me how quickly I changed my thinking about stuff, because there was a time where I thought I was convincing, kind of when I was doing like Linux admin stuff, I was like, okay, I'm going to figure out how to program simple stuff and build simple scripts to do things. And I did, actually. I took like for a hot minute, I would put like one or two things together that I actually used, but it was like I actually had to call the scripts from terminal, like a bash script sort of thing. And it was just clunky, and I never got to the next place where I could just make it double click or drag and drop, like just to simplify it that one extra layer. And holy
that,
God, the tedium.
You sound
the tedium. The tedium, man.
No, what?
I just never got back to it. It was just like something that I had to...
No, guy, you did all the tedious shit. You were two casual steps away from the finish line, and then you said, fuck this shit, and you walked home. That's what you did. Going from a bash script to a two-click
is like... I end up finding some other solution. Don't give me shit.
Guy, you just like broke my... It's so making a little shortcut.
Well, I know it now. I know it now. I didn't know it then. I know it now.
You gave up on the simplest part. That's hilarious. I'm glad that I know that.
Oh, God.
But it was so much like trying to dig into it and like piece all these things together. And every single time I'm like, and I know this is kind of like the process now, but I'm just like Google searching for like the simplest stuff. And it's just like, it's like having to watch a tutorial for how to do something over and over and over again. And you know how to do it. But if I sit down and I'm looking at it, I'm still like, my mind is blank, you know? Yeah. So I have to go find it. And it's crazy. It's one of the things that AI did for me when I started realizing that I could build stuff with it was that it makes it so that my mind is never blank. I have something to work from. And even though I don't code or I'm not like a full-on programmer, like there's something to take apart. There's at least something that will give me an error and then I can try to troubleshoot, which is a whole different thing than looking at a blank screen and being like, all right, well, what do I type? You know?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm curious, how long have you been using AI? Right now, you're just basically using ChatGPT, right?
For
pretty much everything.
I'm using OpenAI stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
AI, I really got started with it in college. Where you had to learn about AI in college, which I thought was weird at the time, but looking back, it's very obvious.
How many years ago was that? What year was it?
I graduated in 2020. I think 2018.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
AI is just artificial intelligence. That's just, you tell the computer, you give it some percepts, some way to perceive its environment and give it some method to go from its input to a decision. So from its percepts to its actions. And then that's all AI is. So pretty much everything is AI. Everything you do with computers is AI. What people are really talking about is machine learning, where the thing you teach the computer how to do isn't how to do something. You teach it how to learn from its mistakes. And that's really the specific branch of AI.
You teach it the patterns of doing.
Not even. You teach it its actions, the actions it could take, but you just tell it what the goal state looks like. Here's what a good decision will do. Now figure out which decision is a good decision. Learn. What you teach it to do is learn. You teach it how to learn. And so with that, it can just pick up the ball and run and solve problems that no one has any hope of even understanding. That, which is insane. We've never been in a position as a society where we could solve problems that we don't even understand consistently, but we can do that now with machine learning. And that brings up a whole other set of issues, which I think it's ironic that I'm more technical with these types of things than you, but I'm far more interested. I'm not as interested in the technical side of AI in particular as I am the ethics of it. Cause I think it's very, very important. Mm-hmm. This is something I've always felt, but now I feel very strongly, the general understanding of how technology works, the floor of society has to be elevated, because AI is just such a powerful tool that if no one understands how it works, how are we going to have good regulation on it? You know, like, we'll never have good regulation if no one understands it. All we'll have is bought out corporate
politicians. A good mental framework on how and where to use it. Yeah.
That, and also having an understanding of how big companies are using it. I think that's very important too. But yeah, so the ethics is also something that...
Did you ever see that clip?
What clip?
Did you ever see that clip from Lacoon? I can't remember. Jan Lacoon. I'm not sure if I shared it in our chat.
Jan
Lacoon. But talking about, he's from Meta. He's like their head of their AI stuff, if I'm not mistaken, or director or something. I don't know. Big top name sort of title. Mm-hmm. He was talking about how the only way that this can actually essentially unfold in a way that is actually good for everybody is for everything to be built out in the open. And he is pushing like really, really hard. And it sounds like them and IBM and like I think it was like 50 companies. I didn't actually go through the whole list. There was an article that I saved recently that I was thinking about covering on the show. But they've committed to basically having open source models. And that the essentially the solution to this is that like the big danger of AI is pulling in massive amounts of proprietary data and building proprietary models that we don't know what went into it and we don't know how people are using it.
Yes, there's so much more than that too.
Necessarily for us as like a service or something.
I'll very quickly go bug eye crack.
Really, really great argument. Yeah,
it goes so much deeper than that too. You can also build AI to lie for you. You can also make an AI very effectively lie for you. So you can be, let's say you just have some arbitrary bigotry or prejudice, like anyone, you just hate people with brown hair. You just hate them and you want to do horrible things to them. So you start going out and doing horrible things to them. And then you just have an AI generate rational reasons for you to have done what you did, even though you know in your head you're being a dickhead. You can make an AI come up with justification for what you're doing that passes the sniff test. And AI is really good at doing that kind of thing. It's really scary. There's a bunch of things like that where no matter where you sit on the political spectrum, you have to acknowledge AI is going to have an impact on that stuff, on that. And so I think, therefore, I think everyone can agree that the general level of education of this stuff for everyone should be elevated. Because how are we going to live in a democracy if people are voting on things they just don't even understand? That it just, I feel like disseminating information on this is very important.
From the context of libertarian anarchist perspective, is it's like, well, the issue is how much power are we voting over? Because if voting is necessarily going to be the lowest common denominator of the people who don't understand the consequences, then the idea is to how do we set up a system where they have as little power as possible that's being fought over? You know, it's like if there's like a pile of $10 trillion of stolen money that everybody's fighting over, well, then whoever gets control basically controls everything. They run the whole world. We're talking about the amount of money that could just buy up whole countries. But if there's like $100 million, well, there's only so far you can take it, you know, and the battle will only get so vicious because it's not enough power. It's not enough control to basically ruin everything if it's done wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's also an interesting element too, in the context of there's one thing that I heard recently was remembering that when we think about AI as a tool, you know, you talk about like, you know, let's say somebody hates everybody with brown hair. And so they just get it to come up with like really clever rationalizations, and then they can just flood the information, or they've basically flood the argument space with their rationalizations, right? Is that there's always an actor. There's always someone, you know, like somebody could come up, like I know people who do a great job at rationalizing awful shit already. You know, like they don't need AI necessarily to do it.
You but know? AI is definitely better than they are. That's what's scary.
It's about their, in a lot of cases, because you're looking at trying to get it above the median, up the higher quality data you can train it on and give it that logical pattern, so to speak, the better it can actually produce better than the average person at rationalizing something, which is stupid. What's funny, there's another element, is that it's usually the intelligent people are actually the more dangerous ones. And I had Devin Erickson, who's an author, on the show, and he had a really crazy, like awesome thread on Twitter actually, that was arguing with with Schmidt, the interim CEO of OpenAI, actually, and his thread blew up. But one of the things that I thought he was really, really cool is that it's not that, like, we usually think that dumb people are the dangerous ones, but the dumb people are the ones that don't have any ideas. The really stupid ones are the ones that don't really come up with anything, and they're not confident enough about what they might even come up with. It's the people who are intelligent and think that they're so smart that they can rationalize away all of the negative consequences of their ideas, of the things that they are certain are going to fix the world. So that if they're in charge of everything, then they can rationalize away all of the trade-offs of their plan, or that everybody will just agree because obviously my plan is just a genius. It's just incredible. And all I have to do is tell everybody what my plan is. And if I force the people who disagree because they're too stupid, well, then I'm not a tyrant. I'm just fixing the world and these stupid people are getting in my way. But then you realize that is literally every tyrant since forever.
Yep.
They're certain that they're fixing the world and there's all these stupid, disobedient people who are getting in the way of their final solution.
Yeah.
Quote unquote. This might be incline us to having an ethics discussion at some point. I want to keep this on the building series.
I understand that, but I also think on another level, that's an equally important thing is people understand because I hear all the time people say, really, I don't want to be mean because I'm sure there's anyone listening probably thinks this too, but if you think that AI is going to take a mind of its own, if you think that that's the nature of the problem, I feel so you are woefully fucking unprepared for how the next 10 years are going to play out. If that's your understanding of AI, you're fucking woefully unprepared. The problem is it's never going to take a mind of its own. That's the problem. It's never going to do that.
Yeah.
It's never going to consider the moral or ethical ramifications. There will always be an actor. Yeah. It's just going to do exactly what someone tells it to do. And it doesn't matter what the consequences are. It's not, it will only serve somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's really scary to me. So, a libertarian anarchist, that's not what I am. I'm pretty libertarian, but like we're pretty far, but at the same time, we could both understand people need to understand this stuff and be able to work with it themselves. And I think that the more people that understand that, the closer we are to an open source community. And I only use things like Facebook or whatever, because that's where everyone else is. I have no other options, but I am weary because I understand the strings behind the curtain. But I have no other choice because that's what everyone else uses. If we can try to learn our mistakes from the Web 2 world, moving into whatever comes after, and make sure everyone understands and makes an informed decision before they set up shop somewhere. And before you set up and get used to ChatGPT, become aware of other options, which I use ChatGPT, so I'm being a hypocrite. But just collectively, because like we talk about like this is out of left field seemingly at first, but like there's like cancel culture or call out culture, whatever you want to call it, where people say, I have this money, I don't like that company, I'm not going to give money to that company. We really should take that, and instead of using it on people, we should be using it on companies that fuck with us. You know, I had a bank use some really shitty backend service, and a lot of my data got leaked because they were using some really stupid microservice. And it's like, well, I don't want to use that bank anymore. It should be the same type of thing with tech companies and AI companies. If you're doing very unethical stuff, it's actually destroying our economy at a large scale. The way that these big companies are working, it's actually like destroying things, and it will leave an impact that we'll feel for decades. So we shouldn't support. So I'm kind of rambling about it, but all I'm saying is please look into the ethics and educate yourself on AI. It's the most important thing anyone can do.
Yeah. Dude, it really is though. Like one of the things, even I just had a chat with Bob Murphy, Austrian economist, and I've been a big fan of his for a long time, but I just had a conversation with him. And one of the things that I ended the show on was like, what do you think in 10 years, you know, what's the big kind of wild card that's going to change how everything looks? And he was immediately like AI, like it's just going to change the way we interact with everything. And it's going to do so much to change kind of the way we function, you know, the mode by which we can accomplish something and what we can actually accomplish. Being this building with AI series being a perfect example of where you can actually target one specific group that actually has, I think, a 5x or a 10x productivity increase sitting and waiting for them. You know, it is literally right there. It's about how to use the tools and how to integrate.
Sysadmins, for sure. If you're talking about the 5 to 10x efficiency with AI, sysadmin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy how much I use my the little things that I've built, you know, like my zip drop and my transcription or whatever, is that I just have these like automatic tools that I just drag and drop every single time I do a show. Like I'll do it at the end of the show, you know, and I'll have a whole process that's like basically a huge portion of my post-production is done automatically. And I think I'm even going to be able to, right now I'm still using ChatGPT because I don't have a good way to like vectorize a piece of text. But when I'm trying to figure out what to do with the description of a show, I have a built-in prompt that I do, but I'll take the entire transcription for the show, drop it in, and then I'll do my set prompt to get it to format it and phrase it a certain way. And then I never actually use what it gives me, but it's one of those things that if you tell me to code a program and you give me a blank screen, I have no idea what to do. But if you give me something and let me run it and get an error, I might be able to change it. You know, like I'm a better editor than I am like just blindly coming up with something. And that's perfect with ChatGPT because it gives me something to work off of. And it usually has one little nugget of like good. It's like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. And I'll just take that one little piece of it. And then I can easily write the paragraph around it when I realize that that's the idea that I want to latch on to. And I can even tell it to give me 5 options, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you're and it's crazy to be able to just like pull that. Like I'm going to be able to do that locally, you know, which is really cool.
I think learning how to make good prompts that the AI can like work with and understand is very important. I think the best way that someone could do that, if you just woke up one day and you're like, I am pretty good with computers, but I want to start a company or do something. The best thing you could do is learn about the parts of developing. Learn about, like, let's say you want to make a Shopify store. Mm-hmm. What is Shopify? What is a server? How do these things interact? What is the process? What is the abstract higher level process for deploying a web application? Understand these things in a capacity that if someone says Apache, you have some idea of what they're talking about. You know that Apache isn't the front end. Just get to that level of higher level understanding of what software development is like. And if you could do that, you will be not only far more equipped to work with the code that ChatGPT can give you, you'll be way better at giving prompts where ChatGPT can know exactly what you want. Especially like if you like, you build a lot of hobby project stuff, like your Iron Man looking ass shit. Like you have like Tony Stark's house, like it's not really hobbyist stuff, but like it's in like it's almost like in an enthusiast vein what you do, if that makes sense. That's great. But if you're trying to start a company, this is one of the big problems that AI is like this is a next summit for AI. Every clock cycle in a server, when you're running a business, you're paying for that clock cycle. Efficiency is the difference between a $10,000 bill and $10,000 profit, right? So it's still up to a human brain to understand what's the overall architecture of this thing. So it's very important that you understand the trade-offs between different technologies and that you fit those specific technologies in prompts when you're building stuff. Because AI still isn't at a point where it can build you the most efficient thing. And so until we're at that point, I recommend anyone just starting out building with AI, try to understand the tools at play. Don't learn how to work with them, I wouldn't say. Don't like open up code terminals or anything. Just learn the names of things and learn what they do. So like know enough to know that if I say...
It's funny because you can ask AI.
Yeah. You could ask AI what the tools are. You can go from zero to hero in an AI prompt. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This show is brought to you by the Cold Card Hardware Wallet. My favorite setup, which I know I talk about a lot, is the Nunchuck Wallet on mobile that just connects directly to or just talks NFC whenever I need to sign. The Nunchuck does not hold my keys. It is securely on my cold card, not connected to the internet, not vulnerable to a phishing email or any malware or anything like that. If I ever need to send a transaction, I just create the transaction on my Nunchuck wallet, and I tap it to my cold card, I hit sign, I tap it again, and then off it goes. There is no easier interface and way of interacting that grants a higher level of security, in my opinion, than that right there. It's genuinely incredible to me that we even have this capability in the Bitcoin space. And CoinKite has just made an entire suite of fascinating security and just fun Bitcoin devices and hardware products, like the block clock. Just connect it to your node and have it show the Bitcoin price, have it show the block height, just right there on your desk in this really cool package. If you haven't checked out what they have to offer, you definitely need to. And don't, when you go over there, do not forget that I have a 9% discount code. Bitcoin Audible, all one word, gets you 9% off. And you can go through the link in the show notes or just remember the discount code, which is not hard. It's just the name of the show. You can go through the link in the show notes to go right there or just go to the store, browse around, see what you want, get yourself a solid hardware wallet, experience the tap to send with a cold card hardware wallet. It's just kind of magical. And get notified for the Q1. I'm really stoked about my Cypherpunk BlackBerry, the new model that's going to be coming out. So check that out as well. Don't forget, 9% off. The link is right in the show notes. Go check them out. How are you using ChatGPT more than anything with kind of the projects that you're working on now?
I use it mostly.
What's your main avenue?
So I use OpenAI with GitHub Copilot, which I believe is just a special GPT from ChatGPT. They don't explicitly tell you that. I'm inferring that that's probably what it is. And plus some other cool bells and whistles. But I basically will just, if I have a new part I want to build, I will just ask it for that new part. But it's easy for me to generate prompts because I didn't use AI to start this. I just built it. And then as I needed new things, AI was more of a time saver. AI is good for that now, as it is in 2024. AI is really good at that, saving you time with typing. But I already knew what it was going to generate before it generated it. A big shortcoming of AI.
How often does it get it wrong?
All the time. It'll get it wrong to some degree, which is why you have to understand. And then sometimes it will be right, but something it generated before was wrong. And you didn't know it was wrong then, but now that you're building this new part, then the errors get revealed. Integration errors like that. That's one thing AI is not good at, is dealing with integration errors. So unit tests are very good, which I've discovered the hard way building our project together. Unit testing is very important. So if you have integration errors, good luck having AI help you with that. There are improvements. GitHub Copilot has the workspace feature, and the workspace feature is like a new AI agent that comes in and looks at your prompt and then scans the entire code base to look for the relevant code to put into the prompt for the GPT, which is really useful. It's not great, but it's better than
That's
nothing. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is interesting. I think that the GPT part of AI, I think that's kind of just solved. I think innovations on AI for the most part are going to be auxiliary in between steps between your prompt and the GPT. I'm not a AI developer. I don't know. It seems like that's where the market's headed.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Yeah, that's one thing is I think the open source and the smaller models are going to continue to get better. But I really think I think we probably have already hit like kind of a threshold or a window where the way we think about like these models right now, they're not going to get any bigger and better. You know, the weights aren't going to improve that much until we have computation that can train it on where it can give you a one sentence answer, but it can also give you a 2 pages of code answer, and that those 2 pages of code are actually cohesive. But that's far more a data collection problem and a computation problem in training something with that level of kind of context length than it is making the model bigger. So it's like the model getting bigger isn't going to give that much better quality now. I really think
where the big returns are in this next era are how we pull these things together. I still think we haven't figured out any of the basic ways that we can have seven different LLMs that do very specific things, work cohesively together to complete a single task in kind of like an intelligent way, where an agent is using multiple other agents and, you know, multimodality and all of these things. I really think that's going to be the breakthrough, is implementation details, is how do you integrate this into the way we use machines already? Because there's already just so much to unpack, to unravel. Like, I think it'll still be 10 years before we take LLMs as they are today, or I guess the models as they are today. It'll be 10 years before we actually fully realize what we can actually do with them.
I think,
and how they can genuinely be massive productivity improvements. You know what I mean?
It also depends. I think the productivity improvement is also something that could depend on the nature of why you're using it. So, for instance, something I'm building along with what we're built. Can I say the name of it, or is it like, I don't know?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I guess we will. I guess.
But besides that, I'm also working on this.
Should we?
I don't know. You'll have to. You're gonna use it. It's gonna blow your pants off. It's gonna make you millions of dollars. So I think, like, another project I'm building besides that, is this thing that uses API keys from the different branches of the United States government to scrape all the data, put it in a database, which it's surprisingly not that big. It's only like a handful of gigabytes. Store that data and then make it super relational so that you can make all kinds of, like, you can make a profile for a person in Congress, every position of office they've held throughout the branches. You click on them, show their profile, basically make us like a social media feed, but it's nothing but objectively factual information that comes from the three branches of government. So you can very easily see what every single individual is doing. So AI is great for something like this, because what I want to build on top of this is something that can take a specific set of bills or actions or amendments or whatever large bulk of data, and just summarize it for you. So you don't have to listen to some newsman. You could just take a set of LLMs that you know have different biases, that you're cognizant of the biases that they have. Mm-hmm. You can have like three different ones running on your home lab, right? And you also have every government document ever that's publicly available, of course, I'm not a felon, on your home lab. And then you could be on your phone, just like, you could be watching one of the politicians talk, running for re-election, right? So you just say, they're saying all this stuff about what they do. You could just go onto their profile and just scroll a little bit and just ask the AI, summarize this person's actions from April 2022 to whenever, and it could do that for you. You can have your three separate LLMs give you their own descriptions. I think things like that, AI allows us to do things that have never even been thought of because they've never been possible before. Like, imagine getting all your news data without listening to another person that has their own agenda. Imagine knowing for a fact the person that's telling you this synthesized information has no agenda. That's something that that's never an avenue that's been possible before that we could do now. So that's what I'm building. But yeah. I see a lot of potential in things like that. Just taking the amount of data that can go through your head at once and just exponentially increasing it by putting a little bit of trust in LLMs that you can choose. Mm-hmm. That was a huge rant.
No, there's a lot to unpack there, because, like, one of the big things, like, so there's like so many political tactics for like a politician or whatever to completely obscure what it is that they're actually trying to do. Like, this is like the age old thing, you know, they put an act through Congress that says All Children Are Happy Act or something. It's just like, it's the most generic, like, positive sounding title ever. And then you find out that there's like $100 billion going to gain of function research for, you know, viral diseases and stuff in the act. And then when, you know, 20 people vote it down because they're not idiots and they actually read it, Well, then you it blasts across the media. They hate children. These 20 politicians hate children, when really they hate the $100 billion going to, you know, develop dangerous viruses on purpose.
Yeah.
And the idea that you don't have to have that trusted source, you can have a quote unquote trusted LLM to break down what is in that thing and why this bill isn't just its title, you know? Like that's a PR campaign. That's what the title is always. It's a PR campaign to sell whatever shit they earmark on the back of this thing.
Yeah.
And to be able to make sense of that, to parse that data when no normal person has even close to the capacity to do that in their spare time, to break down a 6,000 page bill.
Yeah. Right? And we need to solve those kinds of, I think the, if to oversimplify things, I think one of the root causes of a lot of the crazy stuff that's happening right now is the sheer distance between the individual, objective, indisputable, like factual actions that people are taking that exist in objective reality, where there is no opinions about it. This person did this action, period. There's so much distance between that and the average voter. There's so much distance that there's people that make millions of dollars by just sitting in between and looking what these people do and then summarizing it to you. We can use AI and open source technology to just fix that. I don't know how I'm going to make a lot of money off of this, but anyone that uses this, it's going to help them. You know what I mean? It's going to help me. When I hear someone say some shit, I could just look and be like, did this guy actually do this? And within a minute, I'll know objectively if they did that or they did not.
And what was the context?
Exactly. And with the help of LLMs, I could get a greater context in such a small amount of time. Mm-hmm. So I think AI is going to be very good for creative thinkers. Not saying that I'm creative, but in this one instance, I think I have a creative solution. If you're just a creative person that's not technical, you learn about the different technologies in the abstract of how they work just as enough to make prompts. And then you could build whatever the hell you want. Provided there's open source examples.
And there's open source to pull from. Yeah. Which is another reason to pull for everybody to build open source. Because it adds to that collection of knowledge to essentially train all of this stuff on, which means they're going to get better and better as more and more data gets fed into them. And I really, it kind of goes back to Jan LeCun's argument or whatever, is I really think this excites me that there's this level of push in getting it open source from people that I would not have expected, from people and companies that I would have expected to go explicitly proprietary. And part of it, I think, is that they're trying to get a one up on OpenAI, because OpenAI is basically so far ahead of them and they're closed source, that their best option to make sure that these things, their best option is to have the best implementation. And if they can get their data shared, if they can get their models open so that everyone can build with them, then there might be a case where everybody can kind of use these models interchangeably, and they can win on building the best interface. They can win on building the best product around it, rather than having to think about who controls the data or the best ChatGPT at any one point in time. And it kills that moat, so to speak,
I think there's the
people who do try it that way.
I think to say that OpenAI has a leg up, I mean, objectively, yeah, right now, but in the grand scheme of things, They went so far ahead. I think just looking at it from the outside, like I'm not in the company or maybe I'm not looking at what they, there's no fucking way that they didn't break an ungodly number of laws to get where they are as quickly as and as cheaply as they did. There's no way that if we had competent legislators, they wouldn't be totally fucking inundated. Like the fact that I can use GitHub Copilot and GitHub Copilot makes API calls to OpenAI, that tells me all I need to know. You know, GitHub is like steals every bit of code they can. And I use it. We all use it. Everyone uses it because it's the only real option besides GitLab. But if you go to GitLab, people just assume you're a terrorist, because that's just how things work. If you're not using the mainstream thing, you're a terrorist. But
But I think
that is the freaking truth, man. If you're not using the mainstream thing, what are you selling drugs?
Yeah.
You selling drugs, you killing kids.
Which is scary. It's scary, but at the same time, it takes, there's just so much complicated shit. Like, just to save any value judgments of people, there's just so much complicated shit. When you're talking about legislating AI in the market, there's so much complicated esoteric shit that you have to have a very intimate knowledge of. And there's no way everyone in Congress is going to learn enough about it to make competent legislation. They have to listen to the advice of other people.
Not even close.
We need to reduce the amount of how big of a problem this is. The only way we could do that is by elevating everyone's knowledge of it. But I think Congress is going to catch up enough to go, wait a minute, there's no way you people aren't breaking the law. And so I think open source in general is going to have an advantage in the long run.
Well, they did make WorldCoin.
OpenAI did that? Oh, fuck.
Well, Sam Altman, at least. You do not realize that?
I didn't. I assumed it was some Russian. No, I assumed that was literally Xi
Jinping. That was Sam Altman. That was Sam Altman. Same dude.
No.
Dude, it's ridiculous. Oh, my God.
It's scary because I could see the value proposition, too. It's just you're obviously a lunatic, you know, if you're trying to actually do that.
It's you know, one of the interesting things is that, like, this is all a bandwidth problem. And what's funny is as quickly as we're developing tools to clear bandwidth, like being the example is an AI that can, like, potentially, like, you can vectorize and then potentially pull out useful information or any information regarding one specific context out of, you know, a 6,000 page bill that's being pushed through Congress and they're going to vote on in 24 hours, is the bandwidth of being able to pick out what might be very dangerous or pick out something very explicit that you only care about one issue. Well, what's in this bill about this, is at the exact same time, those same tools, AI in particular, also increase the scope of the bandwidth problem at the exact same time that they help to solve it. Because it means that we also have the creation and the proliferation of all of these various tools, all of these new things that we can build, entirely new ecosystems. Like, every single new project is another thread to go down.
Yeah, you know? And I think
we're expanding that. You know, have a million new builders. Well, then your bandwidth problem expands at the same time as your ability to
sort
condense
of
condense and filter that bandwidth.
Sort of,
easier,
but I,
you know what I mean.
See where I'm coming from? You'd have to assume
for
that there's some,
at least.
You'd have to assume that there's some good faith in the concept of representative democracy, which, to be honest, I question sometimes because problems are way too complicated for everyone to have a reasonable opinion on. Mm-hmm. And it's a catch 22. Like, you shouldn't answer to someone if everyone knows that they're a thief, you know, or if they're just like, they're a horrible person and no one wants them to lead. They shouldn't lead. But at the same time, we also need some, like, cabinet members for the president. It's just a complicated catch 22 where you either get represented by everyone or you get an informed decision, but you can't have both. So I think with AI, for instance, it's a, who do politicians answer to? That's a very difficult question to actually answer. You can come up with an objective answer, but it's, the surface area of the amount of information you'd have to absorb is just Herculean for a single brain. You can't do it. You have to trust somebody. So what if there was some system where it's like, there's government servers. You enter your social security number to get one single account. Everyone has one single account on this government server. And you could say whatever the hell you want to any politician. And the politicians can't read directly, but they could have all their constituents, the people that vote for them, their voter base, their district, their state, whatever. They can have a suite of LLMs of their choosing that condenses the sentiments of everyone talking to them to give them a cluster of, like, these, there's this group of people, they're pissed off because of this. There's this group of people, they're really happy because of this thing. And there's this overlap. Just technology that, assuming the politician was trying to secure as many votes, would be very helpful to them when they're making decisions on what bills to view. I've been super on this government stuff and how AI can fix it.
Some
so
means
I'm
to
keep
filter
going
the
back
stuff
to it,
coming to them as well.
Yeah. I think if we create a system that incentivizes good politicians, we would get that. And I think AI can be a very good tool for creating that. So that's what I've been obsessed with that stuff recently.
Swan Bitcoin has the full suite of Bitcoin financial services. You can instantly buy with your bank account or wire transfer any amount of Bitcoin up to $10 million worth. And you can easily set up what I have been doing for ages, which is an automatic purchase of Bitcoin on a weekly or monthly basis. You just pick your time frame and then automatically withdraw it to your cold storage. And still they have free withdrawals to self-custody, which I was sure would be gone by now. But you should always treat any custodian as a point of failure. And luckily, you won't have to go anywhere for all of the information and advice you need for why you should withdraw and how to do it safely, because Swan Bitcoin has all of the resources you need and will regularly remind you. About 80% or more of their customers automatically withdraw their coins. That is an amazing feat, if you ask me. Then they also have the Swan IRA if you have a traditional IRA and you want to get it allocated to Bitcoin. And there's so much more. With Swan Private, they have inheritance planning. You also have Swan business accounts, and you can even do Bitcoin as a part of your employee benefit plans. They have an advisory. They have the Swan Vault, a multi-sig service for those who want to have the benefits of holding the majority of their keys, but still also want to be able to rely on a trusted institution in the case of an emergency or a disaster. If you haven't started into Bitcoin yet, Swan is an amazing place to begin. Go to swan.com/guy. The link will be right there in the description. Again, that is swan.com/guy. And they will know that I sent you, and my beautiful face will be right there at the top of the page to greet you. I am a longtime user myself, and a huge thank you to Swan for supporting this show, and I definitely recommend you check them out.
It's an incredibly valuable tool for keeping a check, for allowing the public to filter in a sense that, and this is actually largely what social media has done as well, is that it's exposed them in so many different ways where they've been able to choke hold the bandwidth of information that the public is able to get, and that they're not able to restrict that anymore. They still try. I mean, the censorship industrial complex is, you know, alive and well. And I've covered like some of the writings and like explorations of that specifically on Bitcoin Audible. But they want to have those reins again. But the interesting thing is that it has exposed the ability of one person to reveal, you know, the WikiLeaks and the Edward Snowden thing. There was the book by Greenberg. There was a story, I think Andy it's in Greenberg. This Machine Kills Secrets.
Andy Greenberg is the guy that wrote that book.
Yeah, Greenberg. And it's not about the author. It's about what he wrote in the book. There's this talking about a leak that happened in like the late 70s or early 80s, a huge data leak. And what this guy had to go through. God, I'm going to hate myself because this guy was a legend. But he basically stayed up. He found all of this evidence of like government crime and like murder and just all this crazy stuff that was going on. And so he pulled all of this information together, and he had to night after night stay late and photocopy it by hand to get this out. And he did this for like 200 days or something like this. And he specifically, he felt so morally obligated to do this. And he was so sure that there was nothing he could do to not get caught, that he literally brought his kids, his two sons, who were like really young at the time, with him to like every day after work to copy these files with him, because he was afraid that after this was released, he was going to spend his life in prison and he wasn't going to get to spend time with his sons anymore. Like, this is how A, devoted, and B, ridiculous this task was of leaking this information. Then Bradley Manning comes along when we're in a fully digital, you know, environment. And like Bradley Manning, Edward Snowden, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, like all of these things, orders of magnitude, like thousands, hundreds of thousands of times the amount of data leaked in a matter of seconds because they stuck it on a USB drive, and you know, like Bradley Manning, I think, stuck it in his like the bottom of his coffee cup or something.
That's creative.
And he went in, copied it, stuck it in his coffee cup, and then like walked out. And this like idea that the bandwidth, the capacity to expose information, is exactly what is. It's a tool that allows us to keep them in check, because our problem with keeping check on government power is the fact that we can never actually know what they have this control over information.
And so
it's like the werewolf game. I'm not sure if you saw that little clip.
One of the main things that I hope that people realize is that that's actually the one thing that can unite literally everyone. There needs to be more transparency. And like when someone fucks up, there needs to be some kind of like more checks and balances. We've had checks and balances that I think worked when the framers wrote the founding documents. But I think that technology has kind of not outgrown the spirit, but outgrown the logistics of like the first, like, you know, a couple articles of the Constitution. I think that if the framers were alive today, they would have added a whole bunch more stuff about like the government needs to police the people, and the people need to police the government, and the people really need to police the government because the people are sort of a branch of the government. Like, I think the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence makes it abundantly clear the people aren't just like damsels. We have to preserve
not
liberty.
Subservient.
Yeah. And I think we can go the route that I think a lot of media wants us to go, which is pitchforks and killing and war. I think information and building things to force into the light things that are just very clearly not working with us. Like what I'm building, I think that's very important. If anyone listening wants to use AI to build stuff like that,
exposure is
literally
our best
the best thing you could do.
Yeah,
because no one's doing it, but one day people are going to wake up and realize how much AI can be used to do that. So exposure is
the best. Speaking of building this, then, like the fact that we can actually like, let's say a one person, this is like one of those crazy things, like at the beginning of the internet, you know, like one random like 13-year-old kid could build a website and change the world because the network itself was no longer permissioned. You know, you could host it anywhere and anybody could like anybody could visit and then use that service or that website or have access to that information. Even if it was only 10 people, it could still change something for those 10 people. And, you know, when you don't have to, you know, buy a license or like fill out some form or get permission from the bank to even, you know, start participating in something, AI allows us to do that in the context of building things, of actually building applications, of building single use service and like single use functions. Like that's basically the majority of what I've been building are single use apps. Like I kind of think of them as micro apps.
I never even thought of that.
Tiny apps or whatever.
We should do that for an episode.
In what way?
I never thought of that paradigm. Just think about what we build and every function we need and just ask it to build each function. I never thought about doing that. No, you gave me an idea for like a different
approach. It's right in line with the way that we've been using it. It's just kind of a slightly narrower clarification of what.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think the best way if you're trying to get into AI is figure out how to get from where you are to where you could do that. You understand just enough to do that. You know? Like even knowing what functions
are. What's funny is a lot of it actually ends up asking. Yeah. And probably the biggest thing, and I figured this out with doing a couple of different rounds with ChatGPT actually, was figuring out what's going to work best for your operating system, because Mac works really great with Apple Script, and the amount of things that you can do quickly and easily with Apple Script, because it's just kind of embedded with the simple ways that you can double click or make drag and drop functions in Mac, is really easy. It genuinely is just not that hard. I've mostly been able to do the majority of what I've been trying to do in 4 to 5 iterations. Like it's just not been especially for the simple things like my archiving thing, which just zips a file or folder and then verifies it that the whole thing is there and accurate, then deletes the original file and then moves it to my archive location, like on my Linux machine. That is not a complicated set of those are simple tasks. And I think it took like twice. I think I had like one error, and then immediately, and this is something that I do every single episode. And you think, oh, that's not a lot, you know, like, oh, I can do that. It just takes like a couple of minutes, but a couple of minutes every single day, multiple times a day, sometimes you're on hours and hours and hours of this, days of this at the end of the year that you've spent just renaming your thing, zipping it, archiving it, moving it to the folder. And one of the first day that I did this, because I usually would put it off, and I wouldn't do any of my archiving until I literally ran out of space on this machine. So like I have 2 terabytes of hard drive space, and I fill it up monthly.
Jesus.
And filling it up monthly. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. and then I would spend half a day archiving stuff, you know, and I'm manually doing it like one by one. And then I took my little, that's when I built the drag and drop thing. And then I also did one that did it collectively. So it would do it on a whole folder, and it would do everything inside of it individually. So I could do it on my entire Bitcoin Audible or AI Unchained folder. And it would just go through every single one of the projects, archive, and you know, do the whole process for each one of them. And the day that I did that, I said, okay, I'm just going to take my entire projects folder and I'm just going to archive everything. I'm going to put it all in the same format, move it onto my Linux machine, and then delete it. And whenever it would delete stuff, I'd hear the little trash noise. It'd just be like, ksh, ksh. You know, so it would like do that like every 30 or 40 seconds. And it was the craziest thing in the world because, like I said, the last time I had done it, I had spent a day, like once a month, a day would just be lost in archiving and getting space back on my computer. And I started recording another episode while this was going on. And the entire time I was recording, just like every 30 or 40 seconds, it was just a little trash can noise. So this thing's just like running for me. And I'm just like, I'm just getting all my space back right now. And I'm not doing it. I'm working on my show. I got a whole day back every single month. And I haven't had to do this.
I know exactly the feeling you're talking about.
Now the process when you just, is just built in.
I know that feeling when you create something that just does something for you. I know exactly that feeling. Yeah. That feels great.
A whole day was I gained every month. That's a big deal.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
That's not small numbers. So in the spirit of it's not perfect, what have you found are the biggest limitations, or what are you certain not to ask AI because, or ChatGPT or whatever, because you just know it's going to be too much or too involved, and you're just going to spend the whole time fighting for errors, or it's going to do it in a very clunky way.
Abstract and unpointed questions, which is why people need to have a general understanding of, like, instead of saying build me a website, build me a React app. That second thing, build me a React app, you will get a much better response. Much better. If you say, build me a thing, and you just describe the thing you want. Especially if you're running a business, you have to deal with security and you have to deal with efficiency and deployment.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you just ask it to build your thing, you're never going to get something useful out of that. I doubt even in our lifetime, you can ask a question that undirect and get something useful. It's always going to be the more specific question, mm-hmm. the better. The way that...
So you need a mental framework of what you're working, of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You might not need to be able to build it yourself.
You know, that's interesting.
But you should be able to know it's right by looking at it, at least. That would be helpful.
What's funny is I've actually sort of gotten around this or used AI to help direct me by asking it to, what's the framework for building a website? Or like how are websites usually built? Can you like lay out like the main pieces or the main template for how to pull this off or something like that? and I will get it to define the different pieces. And then I will go through each of the pieces and then get it to build something. I've done this with a number of different projects where I just did not know where to start. And there are sometimes as well, one of the things that's really useful for is when I don't know what it is, but I know what it needs to do, is I get ChatGPT, and that makes it specifically something I can't search. Because
so you use ChatGPT to figure out how to make your question.
I don't know the name of it.
I get what you're saying. Yes. That's smart. That's smart.
Yes. I basically get to the points that I'm going to need in my pointed question by asking ChatGPT generally to give me the points, you know, to give me the bullet points of what this thing is.
That's smart. So that's another
option.
It's
actually been really useful. It's worked multiple times. Yeah. Yeah. What would you like to see? Maybe this is Copilot specific. Since you haven't done like Mixtral or done any like local hosted stuff. What would you like to see improved?
For GitHub Copilot, which is mostly a VS Code extension, it would be mm-hmm. awesome if you could use it anywhere. So if I use it in the terminal, if I am running a code, something in it breaks in the terminal and there's an error message, I could just click on it and then GitHub Copilot will just handle the rest. That would be epic. Workspace needs to get better. The app,
so integration with your UI.
Integration with the terminal, yeah. And docs.
Yeah.
Integration with docs would be great. So like if you have like a markdown preview mm-hmm. opened up in a tab, asking Copilot to use that to build something, mm-hmm. that would be great. The biggest thing that I would really love to see is better workspace. So GitHub Copilot has this workspace prefix, which I think I went over a little bit earlier, where you say, use this workspace, use the entire code base, and then here's my question. And then there will be a local LLM mm-hmm. that reads through the entire code base to figure out what the proper context is to send into the prompt to OpenAI. That needs to get better because it kind of is better than nothing, but it fucking sucks. So they need to make it better. That would be awesome. Because that's really, as an already programmer, using AI to just make my already existent skills a little better, that workspace thing would be the best thing ever. That would like double the amount of efficiency I get if they just made that workspace thing better. Because integration bugs, as of right now, you're on your own for the most part. If every individual part works mm-hmm. on its own and then you're combining them together and somewhere along the route, data changes format or something and just gives you some weird error that doesn't show up until much later, AI has a very hard time with those mm-hmm. things, in my opinion. Unless there's some secret way to ask that it will always know. It seems to just suck at those kinds of things right now. And so improving workspace would make those things better.
So one of the things you've done, at least I don't think I've like dug into it like in detail, is you talk about like documentation a lot, and I believe you were using AI for that. In some way, am I right about that?
Yes, but not machine learning, not an LLM or anything like that. Just simple AI where it's just take this code, okay, reformat it like this, and then put it in an HTML file. It's pretty simple, but if you have documentation for your code, and it is built to programmatically mm-hmm. match your code perfectly the way ours does with our project, the docs will always be accurate and they will always be thorough because they're generated automatically on every build. If you're doing that, AI, unless AI fails to make the connection between the documentation and which it shouldn't, that makes questions a lot easier. Because then, especially because like your knowledge is one of the bottlenecks, as well as ChatGPT's knowledge or whatever knowledge. If you and the bot understand the problem, it's going to go way smoother. So if you have documentation that you can look at, you can improve your prompt. If ChatGPT has documentation it can look at, it can improve its response. Yeah, it's documentation super important. I don't know if that was a direct answer to your question.
But. Yeah, and what's funny is that's like one of the big ways that they even... No, that it does. One of the big ways, you know, LLMs are even trained. It's interesting that you can like automate the process of connecting the documentation or the explanation to the code, because then that's the very thing needed to train the LLM to know how to do the code
Yeah, it's not automatic.
In relationship to the verbiage, you know, so to speak.
Yeah, I write my code. Everything I do, I try to think someone who's never coded before is going to look at this and they're going to say, what the fuck? So I try to write it, my code, for that person. So there's like lots of doc strings or whatever. There's less, like, if you go through the code, you'll see text explanations of everything. If you like look through all the files, you'd see that.
Good. Yeah.
And so the documentation generator just takes all that and puts it in one place.
Mm-hmm. And probably fine tuning a model on that makes it like, it makes it much easier to fine tune a model on it because you've got it in that format. Like, so doing that constantly as you go is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you think, one of the things that was completely new to me, actually, when we did the first live stream, which, like, you know, it was just a test run, but I had never actually used Visual Studio. Can you tell me what should noobs learn? Like, if they're in my situation where they've never actually used AI, like, so my situation a year ago or maybe 8 months ago before I like really dug into this, and they're trying to figure out how best to use this and what tools they need to figure out, where should they start learning and what should they start looking at?
It definitely depends on what you're trying to build.
What you're trying to build.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd say probably learn about Python.
Let's say micro apps, individual functions on a computer. Like, you know, I want to do like my zip drop thing that just like archives my files.
I don't know how much background information you need to generate a prompt with that. I've also never tried to use AI to build those little widgets before, so I'm not sure what kind of outputs it gives. Just having an abstract level understanding of things. If you get, your goal is get, like, listen, it's kind of weird advice, but I think if you're in the car, put on a tech podcast or something like that. Just try to, through osmosis, absorb awareness. And then with that, AI can definitely pick up the slack. I don't think there's really any specific thing that anyone would need to learn. So I'm not, whatever you had to learn in order to make your widgets, you know better than me. I've not had to make those before.
Okay. I'm curious, what is it about Visual Studio? So when we used Visual Studio,
VS Code, yeah. It's different than Visual Studio.
VS Code, yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, okay. It basically already had a framework, and we started changing, like creating modules and stuff inside of that framework. What was it about? Like, explain to me why that already had a framework. Because like when I was doing my little micro app things, is I literally just, well, I mean, it had like a file structure. You know, it had a main.js. It had like a system of folders or whatever. Like, what was that specifically for? Is that for like JavaScript app or something? Is that just like a normal?
We did create React app.
Because I opened up Visual Studio and I'm
a little rusty. Create React app is like this little command you can run where if you have Node.js on your computer, it will just create a starting React project, which React is like a front end. It's like the HTML and JSS or JS and CSS.
So that's what did all of that work for us.
Yeah.
That's why it started with something already.
Yeah.
Okay. I was still misunderstanding where that step happened, because I was like, oh crap, we have like stuff. What is happening here that we already have these things? And then we started building the modules for the to-do app and, you know, things were working together. And I was like, what is this? I thought it was something that Visual Studio did. I didn't realize that like I did that step in the process. Mm-hmm. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
VS Code is great. It has like that file system. It has the great extension manager thing. You can download all kinds of extensions, very customizable. It has terminals you can drag into new windows, split screen. VS Code is just kind of the best
thing that exists right now. So people use, plus GitHub Copilot integration, because, you know, Microsoft is doing what they're doing and dominating the market and ruling with an iron fist. So
yeah. Out of curiosity, what's the most compatible thing? Like, if somebody wanted to build something that was going to have the highest chance of porting to iOS, Android, Linux, Flutter, Mac, and Windows.
Flutter.
Or at least the most Flutter. Flutter.
It depends. I don't think
How Flutter does React fit into all of this?
React is a browser. React creates dynamic HTML, JavaScript, and CSS. So it's like a...
Okay.
It creates an HTML file on the fly for you, basically. It deals with dynamic data that can come from APIs mm-hmm. or from its own internal state management and dynamically change the HTML. People will take that for granted, but it's actually...
Okay.
When you open an HTML file, that's a static file. Nothing changes. You need to use JavaScript to make things work. And so React just lets you just write everything in JavaScript.
Just makes it fluid.
Yeah. It's just a really good front-end framework. And it's open source.
Okay.
It was created by my arch nemesis and my own delusional brain, Meta. Yeah. Facebook created React.
No kidding.
But they open sourced it.
No kidding.
They open sourced it and then it just got completely away from them. So I don't even think of it as a Facebook tool anymore. It's just a tool.
All right, that's interesting. So are like, when I, like I say, I have a couple of Bitcoin apps and like Nostr apps that are progressive web apps. Are those likely built in React?
Yeah, definitely. Almost definitely.
Okay.
Unless they're like super simple.
What's the key unit about Flutter?
So
was it about Flutter that makes it difference so well on all platforms?
React can work on all platforms. Technically, you can take React, mm-hmm. which is browser, HTML, JavaScript, or CSS, mm-hmm. compiled and built with Node.js. Node.js can run on anything. So you can run a React app inside of its own application. So if you wanted to run React on the web, you just need a server to send the HTML file that links to the JavaScript of React. If you wanted to make a desktop app, you'd use mm-hmm. Electron, which is a Node.js window app like Qt. I believe Qt is using that. And so that would be a mm-hmm. cross-compatible desktop application that's literally just a Chromium instance that looks special and looks like a dedicated app, even though you're just using a progressive web app. Why progressive web apps haven't taken over and become the cross-compatible go-to, I don't fucking know. They're just the best option, but people don't like them. So in the industry, we got around that with things like Electron, which is just a progressive web app. It's Chromium. It's just a Chrome browser that just runs your specific app because people don't use progressive web apps, but they'll use that even though that's more comp. It's weird. And then to run it on a phone.
Even though it's the same thing, essentially.
Yeah, and to run React on a phone, you would need to take their code, which is mostly cross-compatible, and you need to turn it to React Native. So there's a lot more steps there, and there is several different code bases. Flutter, you have one code base, and that's it. It will compile to everything because it's a compiled language. Dart is a compiled language, which is what Flutter is written in. So you just it's transpiled. So you have your Flutter code that you're running on Android Studio or wherever the hell, and you want to build it for Mac OS. Mm-hmm. You can have it built specifically for something that will run on Mac or on the phones or wherever. Flutter, you have truly one code base and it runs on everything. So in that way, it's better. Flutter looks like shit. I'm very biased against Flutter because I'm not kidding. It will make you feel dyslexic. It's just so... It's like... Flutter looks like what React looks like when it first came out, but because Facebook is filled with people that have brains, they said, wow, this format sucks. And then they completely rebuilt it. And now React is awesome. Flutter is still stuck where React was like 6 years ago. So I don't like Flutter, but.
So you have to build something on top of it in order to get it to visually look like what you want it to?
Yeah.
Is that what you're meaning?
Well, with okay. React, you would technically need multiple code bases, but most of the code can be ripped and put into other things. With React, it's complicated, but you can use the same code kind of for the most part, technically, with like 7 asterisks. Flutter, you can just use the same mm-hmm. code with 1 asterisk, 2 asterisks being 1. You will sometimes have bugs that only occur on one thing, and it's the most frustrating fucking thing I've ever done. And then the other asterisk with Flutter is the way the file management, the file systems work in phones is fundamentally different than desktops. So if we're trying to use Hole Punch, I don't know why we'd wink, wink. I don't know why we'd be using Hole Punch for anything. But if you wanted to use Flutter for mobile and PC, you'd have to figure out some way of handling if mm-hmm. if the user agent is a phone, use Hole Punch mobile and then use Hole Punch desktop if not. But it would be a headache.
Gotcha.
So yeah, there's really no simple answer.
Interesting.
But if you learn if you learn the basics understandings of React, Python, Node.js and Flutter, just have like some basic high level understanding, like read a quarter of a book about each one of those things, you can probably use it with AI to build mm-hmm. a lot of the things that you can think of in your head. So if you want like a small number of tools to learn that could probably mostly get you whatever you want, I'd say those React,
get you as much
Node
runway as possible.
Flutter. Yeah. And Python.
React, Node, and Flutter. Okay.
And Python.
React, Node, Flutter, Python.
If you learn on a high level, learn about those, great return.
Gotcha. Well, hell, we're already at like an hour and 12 minutes, and that's probably a good like bullet point list for people to start with to actually start digging into how they want to build something. Did we even talk about like what app we wanted to build in the next of the series?
I don't remember.
I think what you wanted to, what you thought would be the most useful is how to figure out how to integrate with an API.
And
we could do a, you know, ChatGPT API or a price, like a Bitcoin price API or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, but
because integrating with that.
Listen, guy, I understand the community, right? I understand it's Bitcoin, not crypto. Okay, I get that, right? If we do crypto instead of Bitcoin for this project, there's more concepts that will be involved. It won't be a one-to-one. It will be a many-to-many thing. So like instead of printing, because there's always going to be one type of Bitcoin and one price tethered to it at any given point in time. But if we have a dynamic number of mm-hmm. cryptocurrencies with a dynamic number of prices at any given time, there will be more concepts involved in coding that. And then we get a response from the AI and we could talk about how that works. And I just feel like there'd be more useful content in there if we did cryptocurrencies instead of Bitcoin, purely for the fact that cryptocurrencies is many and Bitcoin is one.
Gotcha. Just the ability to integrate like,
or we could an do entire Bitcoin array
of information.
Yeah.
From, like a bunch of different sources.
We could also do Bitcoin and then give like homework that now you guys try to do this with other cryptocurrencies. That's also a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That could probably help. The big problem with learning how to code, AI or no, is tutorial hell. Maybe if we try homework assignments to help people get started, that'd probably be very helpful.
That's interesting. That's something to explore.
That's a big thing too with
we'll
learning.
Keep thinking about if this. You just, are we doing that? We're scheduled for Thursday, right? We will try to have this episode drop on Thursday, and we will be, when you guys listen to it, we will be in the middle of trying to figure out our next building with AI. We'll be recording and building with AI as you listen to this.
Yes.
And we will have a second in that series. And this is going to start getting more cohesive. And I want to see how quickly we can bang out stuff and how much we can build with AI. And also, the big thing that I want to pull out is try to figure out the nuance of how to target what to build. Because I know there are times where just choosing the right direction is going to make all the difference in how well the output from the AI is. You know what I mean? So it'll be interesting to unpack this. And I really hope you guys like this series, because I think this is where the big value of AI is for the normal person or for the technically literate person. I genuinely think there are a million, maybe 5 million people out there that are very technically literate, that are not developers, who can now build small apps to solve their own problems. And they can do it by themselves in 30 minutes to an hour and save themselves that 30 minute job that they do every other day, you know? And that's what we want to do. That's what we're trying to do with this.
With modern technology being what it is, I'm telling you, listener, if there's a problem that you actually care about and you could solve it with tech and you really want to do it, it doesn't matter if you can't code. Try. Just try. AI, as long as you don't give up, like, you might not get it the first time. You might not ask the right questions. You might not make any sense what's happening. Don't give up. The distance between where you are and where you need to be to build the thing is so much smaller. Wherever you are and whatever you're trying to build, the distance between those things is so much smaller than it ever was, even like 5 years ago. Like, it's never been more possible for you to do what you want than it is now. So you're on the right track by listening to this podcast.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's a great note to end on. All right, dude, Hope, thank you for joining me for this one, just so that we can lay out the framework and get ready for this. I will let you get back to building and doing stuff, and I will get back to recording and talking about shit.
Back to the grind. And, we go.
Thank you for joining me. Thank you guys for listening. Hell yeah, man. Oh, actually, let people know where they can join your Patreon.
Oh yeah, I just opened the Patreon. Yeah,
I'll put that in the show notes, everybody.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes. It's some weird auto generated.
But we're trying to get people to donate to get access to this, and hopefully, when we have this project that we've been working on more public, we can have a lot of people building with us and working on this together. And we hope we can build something kind of sustainable and keep Hope doing this the whole time. So don't forget to share that link, send it to me, and I'll make sure it's in the show notes. Thanks, dude.